The people need to know, man. They need to know. A young, lovable, huggable type of guy. And everything is to the back with a little slack. Cause inside out, it's wiggin' and wiggin'. Let's see it.
To the beach, y'all.
Yeah. Sound good to me. This sound hard. Something funky people gon' dance to. Give the record a second and a chance to. Hitting people like a scene of amazement. While they slipping back, my feet just planted in the pavement. Crumble like I never do. So now I'm looking dead at you. What are you gonna do? You listen to the knowledge of a scholar. You say how I breathe, tell them how I holler. I'm the E-double, and I proclaim my name. Straight up, good gang, peeps all game. I'm like a rhino, running through the roughest pack. They figure I'm a trigger happy nigga, so they step back. Breathe. The microphone is who lasts the longest. The news is strongest. It ain't a game, it's plain to see. You listen to the sounds of breathe.
It's Thursday, September 17th, 2020. Episode Z2Z. If you're keeping track, you are about to go down the rabbit hole with Joe and Brian. I am Brian, and with me as always, sitting way over there, still doing the social distance thing, my good friend Joe. Joe, how you doing, buddy?
I'm well, and yourself?
Doing good. Doing good. Much better than the past couple weeks.
Good, good. That's what I like to hear. It's called progress. You're not taking any ass kickings anymore, are you?
No. I really do feel, you know that point at a new job where you feel like you maybe got, you finally are getting the feel of the culture and the way things are done, and you don't feel so inept all the time.
That's kind of like
where I'm at now. I'm getting comfortable with things. So yeah, I'm happy with that.
So just short of 2 months, the legend lives on.
Yeah. And before we get started, I had a little interesting tidbit here. I added up, I didn't add up, my media player added up all the hours that we have of this show, and I would ask you to guess, but I know that you already know. 27 and a half hours of content we have created.
27 and a half life-changing hours.
Brilliant hours. Life-changing. Yep. All that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, we're just pups in the podcast game, but 20 episodes is 20 consecutive episodes is it's pretty solid.
Yeah.
We've made every I think we had to do a Saturday recording once, but otherwise I think it's always been a
it's always been a Thursday.
On Thursday.
We've even had scenarios where we're like, oh no, maybe we shouldn't do it because I don't feel good. Yeah. And one of us is like, no, we must, we don't want to cause riots. We have to proceed. The show must go on.
I cannot imagine what would happen out there, Joe, if we didn't drop a show on time.
You know what? And thankfully, we don't have to.
We don't have to.
So
what? What was you going to say?
Oh no, so we've got two milestones. One is 27 and a half hours.
Mm-hmm.
Does anything special happen for you when you turn 27?
I think 27 is just one of those years that you actually miss,
Yeah, yeah. It's like that time between 25 and 30.
But our next episode will be 21, and that could be that would be a kind of a milestone.
I think it's appropriate that we should well, at 25, you get discounts on being able to rent a car, correct?
Yeah, or your insurance goes down.
And 21, of course, you can drink. Oh, wait, this,
right?
This, yeah. Okay. So we got to make sure this one counts because.
And speaking of drinking.
Yes, drinking.
Motherfucker. Give me two fingers of Southern Comfort.
What'd the bartender bring you tonight, Joe?
The bartender has been beyond generous. He's been beyond generous, but he hasn't been necessarily creative. One of my drinks I had already was a grapefruit and rum. Mm. It was very good. And the second one was a Pepsi and rum, which was also very good. So
there's a common denominator there.
Yeah, I think I like the rum. But you know that. I mean, I thought I gave you a bottle of rum one time for your birthday. Like my favorite.
It was the Private Select, yes?
That's right.
Yeah. And that rum is so good that you can just sip it.
Yeah, it quite literally drop an ice cube in it and the night is set.
It is. Well, I'm drinking. My bartender brought me a beer teeny, Joe.
A beer teeny. And mm-hmm. Before people start casting dispersions upon you, could you please tell us what that is? Because, yeah.
Really, it's just a way. It's a method that I discovered, but to increase the potency of a drink. I only had one can of beer left, and so I dumped a shot of vodka in it. Up the alcohol content a little bit. So
it's like a super beer.
Yeah, I just take a shot of vodka, dump it in a glass of beer, and that's my beer teeny. Although it should be good. It's a good thing I only have one. One beer left, because this is a 7.1% alcohol beer.
Oh, so it's already hitting above its punching above its weight in terms of beer.
Exactly, and so with a little shot of Tito's.
Tito's good.
We're good.
I just had to make sure the adoring fans knew that when they heard the drink, beer teeny, that there isn't any fruit or
nope.
Or a little umbrellas. It's
nope.
Straight up man drink.
Complete man drink.
Yeah. It sounds like, but maybe, beer teeny. It rhymes with bikini, which probably is why I felt the need.
Well, and on that note, I think we ought to move on.
So what do you have in tow today?
Well, before we get started, I want to urge all of our wonderful YouTube listeners that they need to like, subscribe, and share. They need to like this. They need to like this episode. Mm-hmm. Subscribe to the podcast feed, mm-hmm. and hit the little bell so they'll get a little notice on their phones or whatever when we drop the new episode.
And can you tell people why that's important, or maybe you just did.
Well, it'll always be there, but I think that the wisdom and knowledge that we dish out each week is so valuable that I would think that you would want to consume it as soon as possible.
To enrich your
lives.
I kind of think of it as a moment without our show is like a moment without oxygen. Just far too long.
Yeah, I kind of feel like a fish flopping around on the floor or something,
Can't have that.
But if you hit that little bell and say notify me every single time there's a new episode, then you'll get that notification. Yeah. And then of course share it with people, cuz that's the best way for us to get the word out.
Yeah, you two can help us reach more people.
Yes.
Oh, hey, cool. Good deal. So what do we have on tap today?
Well, as always, we have our George Floyd update, and there is actually an update. But before we do that, I got an email. I checked my email before we jumped on here tonight. And I had an email from the Ohio Department of Unemployment. I was on unemployment all summer. I got unemployment and I got those fat COVID checks.
So I mean, so like, I mean, were you like just balling for that time when you were unemployed?
I don't want to say that I was, but yeah, I was.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's probably not a good look. But I think everybody was balling. Well, not everybody. A good portion of people, you know, found themselves in a better position being unemployed than with their jobs, and that speaks volumes, actually. But what did this letter say to you?
Yeah, let's parse this. Let's break this down, because Ohio has been approved to distribute weekly $300 lost wages assistance payments to eligible individuals who were fully or partially unemployed or working reduced hours under a shared work Ohio plan. Because of COVID-19, for weeks ending August 1st through September 5th, 2020, our records indicate that you may be eligible for this supplement. So,
holy crap.
I'm not sure what partial. So I worked. I was fully employed. For individuals who were fully or partially unemployed. Okay, this doesn't apply to me.
Yeah.
At first, I was thinking, man, they really want to give me money, but I misread that. I don't qualify for that, and that's good.
Well, you know, the first thing I noticed about that was,
what's that?
How long that sentence is. That sentence literally goes three lines. I mean, you literally need a gas mask if you try to say it all in one breath. Thankfully, they have commas, but. A very long sentence.
I didn't think about that, but you're right. That's just that's one long ass sentence.
Too much free time on my hands. I'm sorry.
And so, as always, we have a George Floyd update, and this is kind of a big one. I don't know about you, Joe, but when I was reading through this, I think it hit on a few things that we've even touched on prior. Do you want me to read this?
Judge in the criminal case against former cops accused of killing George Floyd. Disqualified the county prosecutor and his staff from participating because of sloppy work.
Yeah, that's kind of big.
That's pretty damning.
Yeah, especially when I don't know. We've had trials in the past where it's just like, what was it? The JonBenet Ramsey case, I think.
Those police
just got dumped on because they apparently just they fucked up everything about the case.
Yeah, and that case had like pooch screw written on it 7 ways from Sunday. Everything about it, the victim, the family, the crime, the cops, the investigation, everything about it was just awful, terrible.
Now this doesn't sound like quite as bad, but maybe in the legal sense it was a pretty big fuck up. Go ahead.
A local judge overseeing the criminal case against four Minneapolis police officers who accused of killing George Floyd disqualified the local county prosecutor's office from working the case, calling their work sloppy during the report. Following Floyd's May 25th killing, Hennepin County Attorney Mike Friedman sent prosecutors to interview the medical examiner who performed Floyd's autopsy, a move that turned the lawyers into witnesses, WCCO-TV reporter tweeted from the courtroom.
Yeah, now that's crazy. I mean, I can see how I'd make that kind of mistake, you know, but you would think that prosecutors, people studied in law would know better, you know?
Yeah, you'd think that he'd done this before, that year.
Yeah.
I mean, is this Mr. Freeman's very first trial?
I mean, I guess it's possible, but I would not think that they would put a brand new attorney on such a high profile case unless they really wanted to fuck it up.
You'd think, wouldn't you?
But we're not. I'm not making that accusation. I'm just saying.
Let's see. It kind of reminds me of the. He might be. This guy might. Well, he won't be matched against the other attorney. What's the guy's name? Lionel Hutz.
I don't know.
Oh, so he won't be doing it. So I guess the. Yeah. Ooh.
I mean, I guess they'll have other they have other prosecutors. Is it?
Yeah.
I don't know who it is. I don't know who it is.
Something green.
Okay.
Let's see here. The Hennepin District Judge Peter Cahill oversaw the hearing, which lasted more than 3 hours and covered issues involving jury selection, identification, and sequestration or sequestration. What is that word? Looks like sequestration.
Yeah, sequestration.
As well as whether the criminal case should be moved out of the county, according to Tribune Star, which reported on the issue. Cahill hasn't ruled on motions, but did note that moving the case out of the county would not likely benefit the process to find an impartial jury, according to Murphy. The judge said that the judge said that forming a jury pool should happen 6 months before the trial date, which is exceptionally early. 6 months, that's a long time. So that the court can screen the media exposure of potential jurors. Let's see here.
Yeah. There's a paragraph above there that really made me laugh when I read it, because it's not like we're not brilliant legal minds by any means, but I think everyone's seen this coming. Attorneys for the men, this is the four, attorneys for the men appear to be turning on one another, each claiming he thought someone else was in charge during the incident. That ignited. So that's like what, that sounds almost like a bad Laurel and Hardy act, yeah. Right? Trying to figure out. I thought she was in charge. Well, I thought you was in charge.
Yeah, he's like, who's on first?
Yeah, exactly.
That's, typically cops have those little stripes on their shoulders, on their arms.
Yeah.
Isn't that usually a sign of rank, and they should be able to figure out who's in charge there that way?
That's on you, Derek.
Yeah. If Derek, the training officer of 19 years, probably could have looked around him and like, okay, this guy here has been here for two. This guy's a rookie. I'm probably in charge. You think that's probably what he thought? I'm probably in charge? Apparently not.
Well, yeah. So that's, I don't know. I don't know. I guess this may not. I don't know whether this is going to affect the overall case or not, but.
How could it not affect the case? The judge saying, yeah, the prosecutor is a bum, and we're gonna ban him from that's pretty bad to me.
Yeah, but you know how judges always give, granted, this is everything is out there in the ether now, but they could do that. You're not allowed to. First of all, you're not allowed to. He wouldn't let the defense talk about it, probably. And they would just bar the defense from being able to bring it up.
Right. So
and then he would tell the jurors that they're not allowed to. They shouldn't consider that when making their decisions and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it's funny. I've never been a juror, but if somebody told me, yeah, that incredibly damning piece of evidence you just heard, just disregard that when you're making your decisions. I don't think I could do that.
I'm with you, man. I couldn't, and I don't think most people do either.
Yeah, it's one of those things where once a genie's out of the bottle, he's out.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that, but we'll see.
Well, so, like, yeah, we'll see. Once again, we keep on saying, everything about this case, it seems as if almost every week there's a new folly or...
every week that there's like someone threw a banana peel down. Yeah.
It's like the hall of shame every week for these guys. But hey, yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, that's why we're here. It's you know, to make sure this we keep eyes on this. What about Arbery? Do we have anything on him?
I have not seen anything about that case.
Now, I saw that there was an article by I think it's the New York Times or Washington Post, and it was dated for maybe 3-4 days ago, but it was basically just seemed to be a summation of everything we already know.
Okay.
So nothing new really came out of it.
Well, that's, you know, it's good, I guess, that they did that in to at least maybe keep it in the public conscience, maybe.
Yeah, but I'm surprised that, you know, all these other things have happened with the Floyd case, and nothing seemed to have happened with the Arbery case. And mind you, Arbery happened 2-3 months before Floyd. So you figure something has happened, but apparently not.
You know what, we can we obviously can't do it now, but one thing we should be able to find out is if and when a court date has been set.
Let's make that some homework for next week.
Yeah, that we'll at least, we should be able to find that out relatively easy.
Yeah, court date for Arbery, as in like when the trial begins or
when are we gonna get this show on the road, man.
Fair enough.
Are all three of the men in jail?
They should be.
Is even the third guy that we didn't find out about until?
Oh yeah, he's in jail. Yeah, yeah.
He's in jail too.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. 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 Something should happen. But yeah. While that's happening, I think there's a few other things that we want to talk about, right?
Yeah. So I always find campaign slogans are always just kind of whatever. Obama's hope. What was it? Hope and change. Mm-hmm. Was that it? That's kind of like, that's just no calories there. And even make America great again. It's kind of, well, you know, it's, I don't know. I get it, but it's still.
I think most presidential themes are kind of, you know, low calorie, no thought zones. It's one of those things where make America great again. If you think about that more than a moment, you're like, wait a minute. Yeah.
Well, I have
hope
something.
And change. Yeah. But you have something.
Yeah, I want to talk about Joe Biden. Joe Biden's his campaign slogan is "Build Back Better." Yes,
Build Back Better. Yeah,
and it's just, I've come across, I got a couple clips here that I find. Let me play the first one, and then we can discuss, and then I'll play the second. But these are. These are, I had to laugh. Clip number one.
You've talked about the need for credible reforms in Lebanon. What sort of reforms are you talking about? And can this government be trusted to implement them?
Yes. Electricity reform. Absolutely fundamental. The reform of the water sector. The reform of the connectivity sector. Every single reform that allows the Lebanese citizen to get to another level of normal life. All this is absolutely fundamental, and all this will need one thing: transparency, governance, efficacy. Lebanon needs to build back better.
Oh, well, this that one has legs, man.
Lebanon needs to build back better as well.
No, well, yeah, I mean, they just had that big bomb go off. Well, not bomb, but that big boat.
Yeah, barge. Yep. Yeah.
So, yeah, they literally have to build back better. They, you know.
Yeah, so I don't know if did they get a copyright or a trademark on their slogan, or I'm wondering if it's like a if they're just part of like a global thing. And I say that because I have another clip here. And this is from a Dr. Ted Ross, who I've heard of before, but I don't know anything about him, but he's also got some interesting things to say.
This will not be the last pandemic. History teaches us that outbreaks and pandemics are a fact of life. But when the next pandemic comes, the world must be ready, more ready than it was this time. In recent years, many countries have made enormous advances in medicine, but too many have neglected their basic public health systems, which are the foundation for responding to infectious disease outbreaks. Part of every country's commitment to build back better must therefore be to invest in public health as an investment in a healthier and safer future.
It's global, baby. Build back better.
Yeah, I think maybe they're getting, you know, maybe they went to, you know, Slogans Are Us and,
like, Slogans Are Us.
You know, pretty much that firm ended up, like, just kind of selling to anyone who showed up. And, yeah. But, I mean, the fact that other people, I mean, this phrase is making its way to other people's mouths is proof that it has legs, just not in the way that they want it to. Because I was listening to a story the other day, and they were talking about how you know if your message is important or if it resonates, because if it shows up coming out of the mouths of other politicians. These guys are probably politicians, but they're not politicians here in the States, instead.
True, yeah.
But hey,
I found that I was like, that's too good not to share. So I think I got to give credit. I think I heard that on the No Agenda show a week or so ago. So
where were all those guys? Oh, this was all about Lebanon.
No, the first one was about Lebanon, and the second one was he was talking about the world rebuilding, I think, after COVID, after this pandemic.
Hey, well,
so they were two unrelated clips, but except they both have the Build Back Better slogan in them.
We might have to start. We might have to find our own use for Build Back Better, because I'm pretty sure that Joe Biden isn't maximizing its use.
Right.
Yeah, I think we could do better.
Okay.
We might have to take that challenge, throw down the gauntlet.
Well, do you So, what are your thoughts on George Soros, Joe? Is he the big global boogeyman that the right likes to make him out to be, or, as I called him, a self-hating Hungarian Jew? Is he? What do you have any thoughts on Soros?
Yeah, I just thought he was a lovable, huggable type of guy.
Okay.
Well. Yeah. Do you catch the reference? That reference is '90s, early '90s music.
Oh no! What I miss?
Criss Cross.
Oh.
Yeah, it's yeah, ridiculous. Please ignore it. I just dated myself.
You did. Although I'm a Criss Cross. I always considered them. Was that in their like one hit wonder? I mean, their one song.
Yeah. Lovable, huggable type of guy.
Huh. Well, guess I got an idea what the opening track to this episode is going to be.
Please do share. What could it possibly be?
You have to wait and see, man. You have to wait and see.
Well, okay, George Soros.
So a lot of people have a lot of thoughts on the guy. The right they typically think that he almost think of him as a puppet master who pulls the strings and orchestrates all of the ills that are going on in this country, using his money to fund various groups and organizations. And it's proven. I mean, he does fund a lot of progressive left wing groups, but I don't know. You brought this to my attention, and you haven't heard the actual video yet. I listened to it once when I was getting the clips ready. But Newt was on a Fox News show. I don't know what it was, but I think they were talking about the protests and riots and whatnot, and then Newt finished off. He finished off with this, and just I don't know. We'll listen to it, and then we can talk about it. But there's a big long pause at the end. So, and then there's some more. So, it's not over when you think it's over.
What?
Yeah, it's so true. They represent everybody, right? Speaker Gingrich, I know you have a final thought for us.
Yeah, look, the number one problem in almost all these cities is George Soros elected left-wing, anti-police, pro-criminal district attorneys who refuse to keep people locked up. Just yesterday, they put somebody back on the street who's wanted for two different murders in New York City. You cannot solve this problem. And both Harris and Biden have talked very proudly about what they call progressive district attorneys. Progressive district attorneys are anti-police, pro-criminal, and overwhelmingly elected with George Soros' money. And they're a major cause of the violence we're seeing because they keep putting the violent criminals back on the street.
So I'm not sure we need to bring George Soros into this.
I was going to say you'd get the last word, Speaker.
He paid for it. I mean, why can't we discuss the fact that millions of dollars he spent?
I agree with Melissa. George Soros doesn't need to be a part of this conversation.
Okay. So it's verboten.
All right. We're good. Okay. We're going to move on. Historic day at the White House. We covered it from stem to stem. Stem to stern for major change.
So Newt Gingrich was calling George Soros apparently the universal bad guy,
which is to be expected because Newt he's about as right as they come, I think, when it comes to especially partisanship. But what struck me the most wasn't Newt so much as their reaction to him. I don't know. Something about it seemed odd, their reaction. It's like they just didn't want nothing to do with Soros.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where, like, if you say, you know, like he said, what, anti-police, pro-criminal? I mean, to me,
right,
once you start answering his question, you've already lost because you're accepting his premise. You're then saying they're not anti-police, they're not pro-criminal, and as you said, kind of in episodes before, like, you know, once you start going from talking about what you want to talk about to defending yourself against what somebody else said, you're already in the losing position. So right. that may have been it. They may have been like, you know, we're just not gonna, you know, and you know, we're just not gonna touch on anything that's conspiratorial, even though the lines of money are clearly followable. You know, we know who got what when, but you know, it's just not a good place to stand and fight, so to speak.
Yeah, that's fair to say. Regardless, it made for some very awkward television.
I mean, did the newscaster look like a deer in headlights? Because that was a pretty long pause, and that you know what, 3-4 second pause feels like an eternity.
I'm trying to think. I think the camera might have even been on Newt. And you know the way all these things are done now is everyone that's being interviewed is like they're using like their own cam from home and stuff like that. So Newt wasn't looking his best anyway, but yeah, it was quite bizarre. I thought that was funny.
Why wasn't Newt looking his best? Where's his wife?
Well, of course, apparently she is living it up in the Vatican, right?
Yes. She is the she's the current ambassador.
The ambassador, yeah.
Could you imagine what type of swank apartment she enjoys as the ambassador to the
Just my conspiratorial side. The conspiratorial side of me would love to just be the Vatican ambassador. I'd be in trouble the first week because I'm trying to break into the secret vaults that are miles underground and
free all the cable.
trying to find those hidden Bible pages that disprove the existence of God and all the other crazy shit that I know the Vatican is sitting on, man. I want to expose it all.
They'd
have me out of there so quick.
Now that I'm the ambassador, point me to where all the secrets are. Yeah. All of them.
I watched Tom Hanks' movie, man. I want to go there. Show me those places.
Ambassador Newman, it doesn't like work like that. You're here to toe the official U.S. government line.
What?
Okay, there will be no disclosing of secrets to people, okay?
The people need to know, man. They need to know.
Sorry. Especially the Vatican secrets, no one can know. Next.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, yes, some secrets are probably best kept very secret.
Yeah, it's I don't know. To kind of follow up on what we said last week about large groups of people. People in large groups are stupid. Mm-hmm. And just imagine, and when I said that, I think I was just talking about America.
No, we were talking about why Trump didn't come out and ring the alarm bells.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But I was thinking in terms of ring the alarm bells to the American people. Now, just imagine that somebody rang the alarm bells to the entire world that Christianity was fake and was built upon a lie.
You know what? I think that if someone were to do that, they would find themselves where the guy who invented the engine that runs off water.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to that guy, that's where you guys would be close company.
For sure. Yeah.
As in buried, forgotten, and lost to history forever and ever. And by the way, he was a bad person.
Right. No. So I came across another interesting story. I try to keep when I bring stories to the show, I try to always make sure that they come from sources that are considered relatively neutral. You know, I'm not going to bring some story that's from some unknown right-wing website and try to propagate it.
I don't know about that, man. I think I'm going to have to call bull on that one.
Have I done that?
Yeah, we were talking. I mean, and this is something because one of the associate producers of the show, Benita Smith. You brought something on from the Government Accountability Committee or something like that. We were talking about
Well, that sounds fucking official to me.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But she looked it up and found out that it was associated with Bannon.
Hmm.
Remember when we were talking about, what was it? About where the, one of the election stories that where the, what were you saying? This will come to me eventually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's not get sidetracked.
No.
That's the exception to the rule. But I mean, by and large, I try to pay attention to the URL, to the source, and I try not to. But anyway, I only say that to say this. Yes, this is a story from Rush Limbaugh, and so I know people, you know, people may just turn off right now, but he's
still alive.
You know, I need to make a point to listen to him more often, because when he's gone, I'm going to miss him. He's fun to listen to.
He's funny, but oftentimes funny boohoo. He's like, yeah, I feel dirty for laughing. But it was kind of funny to be the way you said it.
So anyway, he I guess on his show sometime this week. This I don't know who was reporting this, but and I'm sure that whoever was reporting this is also one of those low credibility websites. But since they're quoting him, and that's all that I'm really interested in. Anyway. A shocking warning from Limbaugh if Biden beats Trump in November.
Bum, bum, bum.
Palm Beach, Florida. If Joe Biden defeats President Trump in the November election, it will mean the end of democracy and leave only one political party in power, warns popular radio host Rush Limbaugh.
Stop right there. It just dawned on me how we've been covering all these stories about, you know, how everyone thinks that Trump's going to try and get an extra term, and Obama's going to try to get like a third term, and it's kind of seemed like in the same vein, where, you know, if such and so gets control, it's over. America is done, finished.
I'll tell you what piques my interest about this, though, is that I absolutely believe that the people in Washington would much rather not having to worry about us people that they're supposed to be representing. they would love it if we would just shut up, give them our money, and let them do what they want.
So shut up.
And I'm not making a distinction between Democrats or Republicans. I think the people, the leaders, the establishment, I think that they would be that the only problem with being a senator or being a House or being a representative is that they have to pander to their constituents every 4 or 6 years.
Hey, pandering isn't easy.
Right.
Like pimping isn't easy.
Right. Oh damn, man! Now I've got another song to compete.
Yeah, all these dilemmas.
Yeah.
So what did he say?
I might have to go with Big Daddy Kane over Criss Cross. I'm not sure.
So what else is he predicting? This diary.
Well, here's what he said, and this is when I read this, this is like some shit that I could literally see happening. Now I don't know whether the fallout would be this apocalyptic or not, but I don't know what would a country. Well, he says one of the first things that they will do is grant statehood to D.C. and Puerto Rico. And that will give them 4 Democrat senators. They will never lose control of the Senate. They will never lose control of the House. They will pack the Supreme Court with who knows how many new justices, and they'll all be left-leaning justices, and it won't take them long to do any of this. And after they've done it, there will be one party. We will be a one-party state. The United States will be a one-party government.
Yeah, I think he's been hitting those pain pills a little too hard.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if you want to get a bunch of people riled up, that's a good way to do it. And truth be told, the way DC is changing now, you might have a few years of having, if the other 50 states were fool enough to be like, okay, we're going to allow DC and Puerto Rico to become states. Puerto Rico isn't even a state, or Puerto Rico is a territory, right? So,
right.
But yeah, DC could easily be a Republican bastion inside the next 7 to 10 years, in my opinion. Just by the way that the city is changing and who's moving in and who's moving out. Gentrification in DC is real. As far as Puerto Rico, Hispanics don't lock in step vote Democrat. And in fact, there's a story coming out of Florida this week that suggests that as well, that right now the Cubans down there are breaking for Trump over Biden. So I don't think the Hispanic vote is spoken for the Democrats, not by a long shot. So yeah, I think that's a little cartoonish.
Yeah, I wasn't super worried about it, but I found it interesting because I'd not heard anyone else put forth that concept.
Well, the concept of Joe Biden winning? No, I haven't heard that either.
Ha ha! Wait a second. Wait a second, Joe.
You know, I was expecting a much more rapturous laughter, but you know, hey.
I'm sorry. I fucked up and loaded the audio. The laugh track that I loaded up in here is like, it's like 5 minutes of different laugh tracks, and I need to go through and find the most raucous one and load that one up. So my apologies, man.
Next time, man. Next time. Don't let it happen again.
So Trump, you mentioned a second ago about how people always get riled up when presidents, you know, they worry about presidents wanting to buck the Constitution and appoint themselves kings and you know, have the third term and all that kind of stuff. And you sent me another article that this week that Trump about Trump saying he will negotiate a third term because he's entitled to it.
Yeah, third time's a charm. President Trump said he plans to quote unquote negotiate to run again in 2024 if he wins re-election this November. His latest series of comments have alarmed critics, who say he has little regard for the constitutional boundaries.
Right.
And let's see here. Key facts. During a rally in Nevada, Mr. Trump predicted he would win re-election and carry Nevada, a state which he lost narrowly in 2016. After that, Trump said, we'll negotiate. Asserting that he probably is entitled to another 4 years based on the way they treated that we were treated. Mm-hmm. The comments echo comments Trump made in Wisconsin in August, in which he stated he would win 4 more years and go to run another 4 because they spied on my campaign, likely a reference to the unproven Obamagate theory. Also, Michael Cohen, Trump's former fixer-term prolific critic, has argued that Trump's comments should not be disregarded as humor, instead asserting that Trump believes he should be the ruler or dictator of the U.S. and wants to change the Constitution. One last quick piece. Cohen predicted that were Trump to win re-election, he's going to automatically day number one start thinking of ways he can change the Constitution and go for a third term and then a fourth term. So, El Presidente, dictator for life.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe that.
No, I guarantee you that it's not going to happen.
No, but and I'll tell you why. Because if Michael Cohen actually believed that he would try to become president for life, don't you think Michael Cohen would shut up? If he actually believed that, don't you think you want to be still on Team Trump?
Yeah, because he's going to the concentration camps first.
Yeah.
There'll be a wing of the concentration camps named after him.
Yeah, Michael, the Michael Cohen.
The Michael Cohen wing.
The guy, the very first guy nominated for suicide.
Here's the thing. As I've admitted before, I don't typically listen to Trump talk a lot, but I've listened to some of his rallies and whatnot, and they're really just like a big stand-up comedy act, and
stand-up comedy act masquerading as a campaign. Presidential campaign masquerading as a comedy act. Which one is it?
I don't know. I'll have to think about it. But I don't know. This article, I would say, is... I don't know. Scott Adams said, I think, that... And I don't know what the percentage was, but I think he estimated it like 40% of... Americans don't have a sense of humor.
40?
I think that I don't know. Some hypers, almost half of America don't have a sense of humor. And I didn't find this exact clip, but this is a regular thing that he hits on at his rallies. And so here, let's check this out. You, go ahead. You want to say something?
No, it did dawn on me that Trump maybe once a month, once every other, once every 2 weeks, he says something about voting that gets people all riled up. Like, I remember, they were in the process of putting John Lewis in the ground, a guy who, his life was, all about, voting and getting people to vote. And I remember Trump making a comment denigrating voting or something like that. So I think, he's just good for saying stuff like that. But it probably should be noted that, who does that? Really,
I guess Trump does that.
Yeah. Silly question. We know exactly who does that.
But any of you people out there with a sense of humor but are also worried that Trump is going to become a dictator for life, listen and ease your minds.
And 51 days from now, we're going to win Nevada, and we're going to win 4 more years in the White House. And after we win 4 more years, we'll ask for maybe another 4 or so. Well, thank you very much. Whenever I say that, I watch, look at all that news back there. Look at all that fake news. When I say that, their heads explode.
I promise all of you out there that none of this will happen. die. People and the people that think that this has a possibility of happening. This just it's that that two Americas watching the same movie but seeing two different things. They have this notion of Trump and no matter how ridiculous it is that people say about him, they can justify it or whatever. But this is just a shtick, and this article was just a waste of space, really.
And just to piggyback on that, the 22nd Amendment to the United States, ratified in 1951 after Franklin Delano Roosevelt. On president fourth term presidency prohibits the president from seeking more than two terms in office. To change it, Trump would have to whip the votes in two-thirds majority of both houses or have a two-thirds of state legislatures call for a constitutional convention, both highly unlikely.
Exactly. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Oh yeah.
Because there is a mechanism in the Constitution for changing the Constitution, but the criteria is so steep.
Yeah, it's not
that for it to happen, you would have to have 100%. Well, not 100%, but you would have to have like support, true bipartisan support on both sides in the high percentages. So.
That is a very high bar. That is a very high bar.
Because that's what I say. I always say, you know, if you don't like the Second Amendment, the Constitution provides a way to get rid of it.
Hey, you should stop reminding people of that because. You say that, and then they come back with an answer. You may not like the answer.
I'm not worried about that.
Sure.
There are more unregistered guns in this country than there are people. I think I read that somewhere.
I believe that.
Just people who don't like the fact that we have an armed citizenry. You might as well, if you can't live with it, you need to go somewhere else. Go to Australia.
Yeah. Ooh. Armed citizens. Yeah, we just keep on talking about armed men, man.
Well,
maybe we should go out and get guns. That way we'll be armed men too.
First of all, if I ever got a gun, and I don't, I'm telling you truthfully, I don't have a gun. But if I was to get a gun, I would not get it from a store. I would not go through a background check. I would not be on some government list. It would be I would buy it from other means.
So what you're telling the world is that the gun that you have is illegally purchased? is that what I heard?
No, the gun that I don't have is.
Well, good thing you're the editor here, so that really never has to see the light of day, man.
It doesn't, but you know what? I'll leave it in here. I swear to God, the only gun I have is a pellet gun. That's the only gun I have. But I'm just saying, if I was to get a gun, I would not get it through a store where my name is on some list.
Right. Yep. Okay. Now it's time to take all the guns. Stop one, Mr. Newman.
Exactly. That ain't happening, baby.
Not on your watch, huh? With the gun that you don't have. All right. Great. So I gotta say,
one of my favorite sign-offs when I'm chatting with people usually, or sometimes when I'm talking, but. And this is certainly not. I think I probably stole this from the 80s or 90s hip hop culture. But I'm fond of saying peace in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, it looks like we might actually be getting closer to peace over there.
We could be getting closer.
I think there were, what, two developments, two countries?
Yeah. What was it? It was, let me bring the story up real quick.
That one was like UAE and...
Yeah, the United Arab Emirates and, Bahrain, I think.
All right, so two big money states.
And so, yeah, and so, I don't know. It's, I'm not a Middle East expert by any means. I know that since I've been paying attention to politics, a peace deal between Israel and Palestine has been every president's failed goal.
Let's unpack that for a second.
Yeah,
that,
sure.
That's a hell of a deal. I mean, if an American president could get the Palestinians and the Israelis to agree on, you know, over there, I mean, yeah, that man really would deserve a Nobel Peace Prize, because what they're essentially asking Palestinians to do is to say, you see that land over there that, you know, where all those, you know, the current Jewish people are living? About, you know, 70 years ago, that was my grandfather's land, literally within living memory.
Right.
You'd have an American president convince people, like, you know what, you know, all is good with the world, the land is theirs, they can have it. It's either that or you're going to, you know, kick the settlers out of the land and give it back to the Palestinians. And so that's one of those things that just, you know, seems impossible. But, I mean, maybe it's becoming more possible by the day.
Well, if, I don't know. This is a layman's view of things, but it's not a bad approach, I guess, of getting, okay, if you can't get this small group of people to play ball, then get everybody around them and get everybody that they rely on for support to play ball. And
it sounds like leverage.
You're
building leverage on them. Like, oh, so you don't want to play ball? Okay, but you know.
I mean, I've heard people talking about this who expect other countries to, you know, fall in line. I mean, we're talking like, I think I heard someone say that, you know, it's not unreasonable to think that there could be another 10 to 15 Middle East countries fall in line with all of this. I don't know.
Yeah, but that all. I guess I'm not convinced that, you know, UAE and Bahrain's real gripe ever really had to deal with Israel, ever had much to do with.
Didn't.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where, like, you know, you're on Team Pepsi and we're on Team Coke, so we just can't get along. It's like, well,
this is what I always go back to. Really, I mean, because when you say, I know, you've said this before, yeah, Israel took. I think they took the land after they were attacked and they won. And so they took the land. Didn't they take the land as like spoils of war?
Well, that depends on which line you're talking about. The original formation of Israel, they basically just said, okay, you Palestinians, no longer yours. It's quite literally what the Americans did to the Native Americans. Quite literally. Okay. There were subsequent wars in like the 60s where they did... conquer, I think there are maybe some wars in the 50s and 60s where the Israelis did conquer land and create a buffer zone for themselves, like a security buffer zone. But the initial crux of the issue, that's literally, you know, Palestinian land that was just ripped away from them.
I know that it's not entirely, this isn't entirely fair or accurate, but I mean, I look at Israel on the map and it's like a speck.
Yeah.
And so it's hard for me to say that them occupying this one tiny speck is that egregious of a crime or of whatever.
No, I mean let me make it real for you. Let's say the forces of Jotoria were to occupy your mom's place, literally show up, kick her out, and move my family in. How many years would go by? How many years would it take for you to be okay with that arrangement?
Well, I may not be happy with it up until I die.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I will die.
Yeah, and chances favor, if you have kids, brothers, sisters, and they have kids, you're going to pass that along. And so, even if it dies with you, sorry, even when you die, your distaste for these people isn't going to die with you. It'll be passed along.
Well,
what you were saying?
Well, I see what you're saying, I suppose. But I don't know, man. The only alternative is war, Israel has started to go to war with Palestine several times over the past couple decades, and they're always being held back, either by us, I guess by us, I don't know. And
well, the thing with Israel is they're kind of fighting a losing demographic battle, from what I understand. Is that my understanding is that Israel is essentially an apartheid state, correct? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not supposed to use that language. My understanding that in Israel you have two types of citizens. You've got citizens that are Jewish and enjoying the full raft of rights and benefits and privileges associated with being a citizen of Israel. Then you also have like Palestinians who get some partial measure of those rights and benefits. We probably should. I mean, I know that, because the United States is oriented towards Israel and against, the Palestinians, I think a lot of our coverage here is slanted towards Israel. But I remember I spent some time where was I? It was Egypt. And I remember, seeing some attack on some city. Through the eyes of Palestinians, or as close as I could get, and I just remember watching young men throwing rocks at tanks, and just thinking about how utterly futile that is. And I mean, can you think of a more desperate situation to be in than when you're throwing rocks at tanks? That just sounds like a totally unenviable position to ever be in.
Right.
Yeah. So,
well,
it sounds like I let all the air out of the room.
No, I mean it's good to have this other perspective. I don't know. I felt like even if this doesn't end up in some idealistic results, I thought Trump deserved to at least be called out, and this doesn't seem like a bad thing to me.
Oh no, I mean it's a good thing, and who knows, he might get the Nobel Peace Prize for it.
I think that's been compromised, the integrity of the Nobel Peace Prize. I don't think he'll never get it. But he's got a way of, I mean, his way of dealing with foreign foreign countries is, I don't know, it's not horrible. I mean, I remember before, I mean, I remember during Obama's, I think it was during Obama's years, they were, every time North Korea threatened to launch nukes or whatever, Hawaii would go into a panic, and even California, I think, and nobody seems to be worried about North Korea anymore.
This is true. When was the last time you heard of
It's been a long time.
That's a good thing. And we've talked about this before, that like or not like him, we haven't been hearing as much about things going on abroad. So we haven't been droning folks. We haven't been hearing about except for the Russians. The Russians are always trying to meddle with our election, but we probably meddle with theirs. So I guess it's probably par for the course. But there does seem to be a distinct lack of international crises going on.
Yeah, I I'm going to try to steal a line, I think, from the great movie Apocalypse Now, but he was talking about when you said how trying to accuse one country of interfering in another country's election is like trying to hand out speeding tickets at the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah, good luck. Oh, but like, this is one thing that makes us all a little dumber in a way, that Democrats since 2016 have been on this. Oh my God, it was interference with our election. This is just totally unprecedented in every way, shape, and form. I don't think I believe that at all. I mean, not at all. I just think that in the past that maybe they haven't been so ham-handed, or this is likely that the powers that be were kind of okay with taking favors from a foreign government. I know, I remember when the very first time I heard of foreign influence in an American election would have been during the, Clinton's election. It was the Chinese.
Yes, the Chinese.
Yeah, and so I mean this new Russian boogeyman isn't that new, and it's not exactly Russian all the time. It's just like the way that countries interact with one another. So.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, everything's partisan today. So it's a given now.
But speaking of partisan, mm-hmm. What is this whole stay down piece?
Yeah, I make myself laugh with my clever little subject lines here. Yeah. Again, I think you sent me this story, but don't laugh, Joe. This is not a funny story.
It's not at all. But it is. I mean,
but it is funny if you imagine the cops then saying, "And stay down."
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of like these cops are villainous. So
the Houston police chief called it inexplicable that four of his officers fired 21 shots into an incapacitated man during a mental health call. They've been fired.
So yeah, I mean, there's so much going on in that sentence. Okay.
So I really have not. I went down through here enough to copy this out of the original article and put it in the show notes, but I'm not 100% positive on everything that's went on. So I thought we would explore this together, and together we'll learn about this. We'll learn about this because it's, I don't know, man.
Together.
Houston Police Chief Art Acevedo called it inexplicable that four of his officers fired 21 shots at Nicholas Chavez, who was already incapacitated during an April call to a mental health crisis.
Yeah,
those, Acevedo.
Yeah, those cops in Houston. I mean, yeah, it's like, you know, I can now understand why people will be afraid to call the police. It's like calling the local death squad.
Acevedo on Thursday announced the firing of the four officers, Sergeant Benjamin LeBlanc, and officers Omar Tapia, Luis Alvarado, and Patrick Rubio.
You know what he didn't announce?
What?
Their prosecution. I mean, being a cop has to be the only job in the world where you can kill somebody dead and have it on videotape, and you only lose your job.
I'm only on the second paragraph. Do they not get charged at all?
I remember reading this earlier in the week. I don't recall. But let's go on.
Three earlier shots fired at Chavez, including one by a different Houston officer who was not terminated, were found to be objectively reasonable, the chief said. Wait a second, I got to read this again. Three earlier shots fired at Chavez, and Chavez was
the guy who was shot.
He was the guy that was shot, okay. Yeah. So three earlier shots fired at Chavez, including one by a different Houston officer who was not terminated, were found to be objectively reasonable, the chief said. Chavez, who was also struck with five taser cartridges and beanbags.
Holy shit.
You don't get to shoot somebody 21 times because at that time, when we discharged those 21 rounds, Mr. Chavez was at his greatest level of incapacitation, Acevedo said.
So this guy went through the ringer. So he was shot with beanbags, tasers, and then they finished him off with damn. Holy smoke! These guys are a bunch of savages.
Was he not incapacitated? I mean, after the five tasers, was he still being aggressive?
Yeah, and this is the other thing. Like, these must be the worst cops in the world. They can't shoot straight. Well, apparently they can. Because apparently, okay, you can keep on reading. Yeah, go on.
Police received five 911 calls on April 21st reporting that Chavez was having a mental health crisis, acting erratically near cars and attempting to harm himself.
They saw that for him.
Here's how you do it, buddy.
Yeah. We're some professionals. Step aside, amateur.
On Thursday, Acevedo released the recorded calls and graphic body cam footage of the incident. Explaining the evidence, Acevedo told reporters that when officers arrived on scene, they attempted to put their de-escalation training into use.
Yeah, emphasis on attempted.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, apparently it went off the rails shortly thereafter.
When Chavez moved quickly toward officers while carrying what they believed to be a knife, though a fifth officer on scene fired three shots, he and command staff found the three shots to be objectively reasonable considering the circumstances. After that, though, while Chavez was on the ground, officers continued to fire. LeBlanc discharged two shots, Tapia six shots, Alvarado seven shots, and Rubio six shots.
I guess they, you know, wanted to make sure he was down. Part of me says maybe the chief should have been fired too. Maybe he should have fired himself, because, you know, this is obviously not, you know, if one guy had fired all 21 of those shots, yeah, okay, yeah, that guy was obviously just out of order. But you've got three guys firing more than, you know, firing multiple shots at a person who's already on the ground.
You know what it makes me think of? And this is completely, there's no correlation whatsoever. But, you know, like a pack of piranhas, and when there's, and it's just like how when, once there's blood in the water, it's right, just, it's like, everyone just goes nuts and starts.
It's like a feeding frenzy.
It's like a feeding frenzy.
But it's like, it turned out to be like a, you know, the OK Corral or a shooting gallery. So, right. I mean, which is all the more reason that, you know, probably most cops should not have guns. Because, you know, here, what, how many cops were on the scene?
I think there were five. Four were fired, but I think he said that there was a fifth one who wasn't.
Oh, no. It says later in the article, there were 28 police officers.
Oh, shit. I see that. Oh, my God.
They could have provided cover, many with non-lethal options.
But Jesus Christ, 28 police officers could take this. If all this guy had was a fucking knife.
He must have been, like, super criminal. Oh, my God. Yeah. Because, like, I mean, okay, so, wow, so. Did they roll up on this guy with a paddy wagon?
I don't know, Joe. This is I did not see this. I was gonna say the gunshots left 29 entry and exit wounds.
So if
but he, I had no idea that there were that many people there.
So if each of the shots, if each of the officers that were present had fired a shot each, there still would have been one extra shot in this guy. And look, another piece. The gunshots left 21 entry and exit wounds in Chavez, many of them from fragments of bullets that struck the pavement before entering him. And so even though...
Oh my God.
Yeah, even though you have this guy on the ground, these cops still missed. That's... They still missed.
And you know what? This next sentence, I think it harkens back to what I said. One of the bigger problems was the Houston Police Officers Union said during a press conference on Thursday that their firings were unjust because the officers had acted accordingly to policy and acted responsibly. If they're not in jail, it's in large part to this police union.
No, but let's see here. I'm sure.
Everything else.
Yeah, 'cause I remember seeing somewhere that the police union doesn't even want them back.
Really?
Yeah. So. Yeah, but.
Oh no! It was the office. It wasn't the police union. It was the guy that the Acevedo said he didn't want them back.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I guess that makes sense. Like, you know, hey, you guys are a, you know, you failed in your whole de-escalation thing, obviously. B, you can't figure out how to use our non-lethal options, and apparently you can barely use our lethal options. Holy crap! Total pooch screw.
Yeah.
Glad I don't live in Houston.
Yeah, and I hate to say this, but I don't know. I guess I'll say it anyway. But as I was reading off the names of everyone involved in this thing, except
Mr. LeBlanc.
Yeah, except Mr. LeBlanc. It's like Hispanic. I don't know, man. I know that that doesn't matter, but I'm wondering. That's the fact that these are all not what you would quote call white. I'm wondering why this isn't being, because I hadn't heard about this until you sent this to me.
Yeah, it came across my feed. I'm not very sure how, but yeah, it did not go unnoticed by me as well that, you know, everybody but Mr. LeBlanc was Hispanic. And that's not saying one thing or another. It's not saying that Hispanic cops are, you know, more bloodthirsty, or that they can't shoot straight, or they fail in de-escalatory tactics, or they don't realize that, you know, you've got 28 people here, you don't have to shoot them. But it is just, I guess, noted.
Yeah. I don't know. That probably says more about me than anything else for noticing that.
But. No, I guess.
But it's fucking Texas, man, right? Yeah, probably the majority of Texas is Hispanic.
But birds of a feather flock together, because I noticed that as well. So you're not guilty by yourself, if that's a cool comfort for you.
Well, Joe, we're wrapping things up here. I know that this we're to the skullduggery, this week in skullduggery segment, and I know that this isn't necessarily, I don't know if this is skullduggery or not, but this is a follow up to a story we had a couple weeks ago, I think.
Let's hear it.
Do you remember that hilarious sound clip we listened to of?
Oh yeah, the saucy nugs and the.
The guy who was pleading. He was pleading for. For places to start renaming. Boneless chicken wings because they don't exist.
Hey, but I remember, when we did the story, I remember saying that man has a point because
he does.
I to this very day won't touch those things with a 10-foot pole because he's right. They
don't
exist.
I can remember it like it was yesterday. I had never even thought about it, but you was like, no,
yeah.
I don't want something. I don't know where that meat came from. I don't want it. Don't want anything to do with it. You were the first person to ever to ever make me ever to even think about it. And I gotta say, to this day, I have never ordered boneless wings, but I've ordered the fuck out of chicken strips. So,
oh well, that's different.
I guess.
I'm sure to me that was a throwaway line during one of our, you know, one of our sessions.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny how, you know, things have legs and they influence people in ways you never think of.
That's so true, man. That's all. That's hilarious. So anyway, there's a follow up. There's a follow up here to that story. Buffalo Wild Wings refuses to rename its boneless wings, but thanks for asking.
Hardy, hard, hard.
We are pleased to report that our outreach to Buffalo Wild Wings has borne fruit, and in response to the question of whether the chain would honor Ander Christensen's entreaty to rename its boneless wings, representatives have provided the following statement. We serve boneless wings, and we love them. So while we disagree with Ander on his mission, we respect his passion for chicken. So this Labor Day, in our sports bars in Lincoln, Nebraska, we'll donate $1 from every boneless wing sold to the local Boys and Girls Club. Oh, and Ander gets free traditional wings for a year on us.
You know what? There you go. You know what?
So they bought him out.
Sold us out.
He sold his soul.
I thought he was a ride or die, but no.
Nah, he's bought out.
Wait, does it say that he actually accepted the
Well, they didn't, but... I would accept it, Joe.
I would too. Hey.
Free wings for a year. I'd accept it.
You know what? I could not do that because I would end up 500 pounds heavier.
I mean, I wouldn't eat like wings every day or anything, but
not every day, but at least twice a week.
I was thinking like maybe once a week, but
hey, but hey, it's free.
They are free.
Yeah. But it seemed like it would go against what Mr. Christensen was asking, because one of his things was talking about how, it screws with our kids because we have them referring to things that aren't true. So I don't think he'd appreciate $1 for every time a boneless chicken wing was sold to be donated to the Boys and Girls Club. So that's specifically what he doesn't want.
So there you have it, folks. Andrew Christensen gets a year's worth of traditional bone-in wings in recognition of his struggle against big boneless chicken.
I wonder if he got like a certificate that says, "Hey, you get like boneless wings for a year." Because if he did, if he doesn't want it, I'll take it.
Yep. Same here.
Did we ever hang out at a Buffalo Wild Wings?
No, I don't think we ever did.
I guess we haven't. They're still open.
Yep, they are. Yeah, exactly. for people listening, it seems like every time me and Joe found a place that we really like and we established ourselves as regulars there, they would inevitably close. Still kills me that the 20 Mile Steakhouse closed, man. I still remember that. I still remember that night we showed up there.
Yeah, I remember the night where Don and us that they were going to close. Remember that time we showed up and we were ordering steak, and I think the first three or four steaks we tried to order, they did not have.
Yeah. How you go to a steakhouse and they don't have steak.
Exactly, and that's how I knew that we need to start looking for a new place.
Wow, I didn't even put that puzzle together, man.
Really?
I just remember us showing up there in an empty parking lot.
that's how it ended. But like maybe a month or so before.
I remember us being, we sat inside. We usually sat outside on the patio, but we were sitting inside and you ordered a steak and they came back and was like, we don't have that.
What the freak?
Yeah. That's dude, that's crazy, man. I never put two and two together like that.
Yeah, I did. Broke my heart.
Now I think it's a gas station.
A gas station?
I think so.
Terrible.
Yeah. Oh, well, Joe, that brings us to the end once again.
Not the end.
I think so, yeah.
Before we ride off into the sunset, is there something we need to say?
Yeah, I want to remind everybody about the whole like us, subscribe, share. Again, it really is important. Yeah, for us to get our names out there, that's the best way you can help, is just to share it with people you think might be interested. I won't guarantee that their life will change, but there's a good chance that it will.
Well, I mean, Brian is far too modest. I will guarantee that their life will change. Yeah.
Very good, very good.
You can take it to the bank.
Take it to the bank.
Get us dollars.
All right, man. So, as always, I think, Joe, seven days from now, we should meet up. Same bat time, same bat place, and do this again. What say you?
I say that's a go. Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right, man. Take care, and talk to you later.
Take care, man. You as well.
Get low. Tell him to shoot you in the front. Tell him to shoot you in the front. I'm going.
the B, the R to the double E-G, and down with my homie G-A-S-N-O-E, and suckers causing static cause they still be disagreeing. I don't give a cause I'm from F-L-I-N-T, in a city where pity runs low. If you ever shoot through my city, now you know, cause we a strictly business and we also got a pride. And if you don't like it, I suggest you break wide. Suckers study looking for the ammo when he wire, thinking that illegal is the best for slowly dying. I ain't got time to see a fiend fiend out, to give up all his money and to give up what he got. That's the way I am, MCB cannot be different. Never change the ways for the world or the government. If it was the president, then I would state facts. You leave it up to me, I'll paint the White House black and ain't no future in your front. I'm rolling. If I was a fiend, then my gold would be stolen. Put my name Breed on everything I own. And when I get my Jeep, I'm putting Breed on the chrome. Shine it up good, kick it through my neighborhood. Motorola phone, fat rims and a Kenwood. Put the kid around it, and then I'll have to drop. Just because the riding people think I'm selling rocks, but ain't no future in your front. There ain't no future in your front. They'll flash when you clock down. To the rules of the world, live my life raw cause I never liked the law. Wear top tens on my ass, Eugene's, selling big gates and tit for tat to the fiends. Cock much dollars but I never break a sweat. Time to move out, my posse saying, you got my back and I got yours. What time is it? Tear down the door. Yo, man, let's start this party up, right? Kick out that fat dance.